Welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've decided to join us today. Before we get started with our subject, just a note, we are paying a lot of attention to the developments around the news out of Monterey, California, that there is yet another mass shooting in our country, and trying to put together a way to discuss that with you, our listeners. We may get to that today a little later in the show, but for sure, if we don't, we will get to it later this week. This is, of course, a subject we keep coming back to over and over because it keeps happening over and over, and we don't ever seem to be able to get the kind of action out of our leaders in Washington and in other places to make it less frequent. So we will again be discussing the issues about guns and gun access and gun regulation either later today or later this week. But today we want to talk a little about the idea of accountability and law and order. Now, most recently, we had Michigan Supreme Court Justice Richard Bernstein admonishing a fellow justice for hiring a legal clerk because of that clerk's criminal history. And it is something that caused us to really reflect on how we think about law and order and accountability and how we think about returning citizens and what they might owe in the rest of their lives outside of prison. But that's not the only recent local incident that has given us a reason to think about that. The assault by Michigan State football players against their Michigan counterparts in the tunnel after a game in Ann Arbor also caused us to think about how the legal system interacts with people when they do things that they aren't supposed to. How do you hold them accountable? How harshly do you try to hold them accountable? Also, the decision to charge the parents of the Oxford High School shooter causes us to reflect on how and when we hold people, it's like parents, responsible for things that they haven't done, but that someone close to them, someone that they are responsible for, has done. We also now have a new decision that has the rest of the nation thinking about this same issue, justice and our criminal legal system. In October of 2021, 42-year-old cinematographer Helena Hutchins was shot and killed on the set of a movie called Rust in New Mexico when actor Alec Baldwin's gun discharged while they were practicing a scene. Director Joel Souza was also injured in that incident. A year later, Ms. Hutchins' family settled their wrongful death lawsuit against the film's producers, including Baldwin, leading some to believe that, well, that was the end, that the matter was resolved. But that all changed last week when the local Santa Fe, New Mexico prosecutor announced that they would be charging both Baldwin and 25-year-old Hannah Gutierrez-Reed, the film's armorer who loaded the gun that day and was responsible for weapons on the set, with two counts of involuntary manslaughter. The man who handed Baldwin the gun, first assistant director Dave Halls, previously agreed to a plea deal to negligent use of a deadly weapon. Now, if convicted, both Baldwin and Gutierrez-Reed could face maximum sentences between 18 months and 5 years, depending on what they are convicted of. But even as this incident plays out in New Mexico, it again raises questions about how we think about justice and liability and responsibility. Think about the movies that we've had filmed here in our backyard in Michigan. But even moving past that, the entire situation brings up many questions about what true justice looks like in our society. How should we determine liability for harm when we know something was accidental or certainly not intentional? When a tragedy occurs and someone loses their life, does that mean we have to hold somebody accountable for that? Or are there times when, even in the face of tragedy, it is more important just to not prosecute, not to try to assign criminal liability to everything. And, of course, how does civil liability play into all of that? We often see lawsuits, civil lawsuits, filed when bad things happen that attempt to hold people accountable in a different way, through money. That's where we want to begin the conversation today, with this very broad question of how we hold people accountable, why we do it, and how the decisions get made about who will be held accountable and who won't. To help us sort through these questions, we're joined by Jalila Jefferson Bullock. She is an associate professor at Wayne State University's Law School. Professor, welcome to Detroit Today.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So let's start with this situation in New Mexico. I was really surprised, and I think lots of people were really surprised, to learn last week that Alec Baldwin and at least one other person, that they're going to face criminal charges in this case. I had kind of assumed that this was something that happened and was unfortunate, and that there would be civil liability that would be assigned by civil juries, but that the criminal context here was pretty far-fetched. I want to get your reaction to those charges, and then have you explain what these charges are, this idea of involuntary manslaughter versus voluntary manslaughter, and what the differences are.
Sure. I think that many of us sitting around watching this unfold were quite surprised when the DA in New Mexico decided that Mr. Baldwin, and I believe it's the armorer, should be charged with involuntary manslaughter. Very, very surprised by that. And I think, though, given the comments that she has made surrounding this announcement, I think that she is trying quite simply to send a message out to larger society and perhaps even to the movie industry that no one is above the law, whatever that might mean. And so I think that's what this is all about. You know, in our country, we punish for various reasons, and we can get into some of that as we go through our questions and hear from our callers. One theory of punishment is retribution, where you would say you punish a person because they are a bad person. They've done something bad. The second is deterrence. And it's that, and under the deterrence theory, we would say that we punish people to prevent future crimes. And it sounds like she's thinking, if I make this statement right now, perhaps I can deter others from acting unreasonably, acting below industry standards on movie sets. So I think that's part of what she's doing. And of course, Mr. Baldwin's celebrity, I believe, has a lot to play into it as well.
So in one way, this is, I think it's impossible to talk about things like this without talking about things like celebrity, which you mentioned, and of course race, which plays such a profound role in our criminal justice system. But I guess one way to look at this is that Alec Baldwin, a white celebrity, is being treated as though he's just an ordinary citizen. I mean, somebody who might find themselves in trouble for negligent behavior in a much less high-profile context. And I think I've seen some themes on social media kind of trying to address that. And in some ways, I guess that is a reflective of some form of justice, some sensibility of justice. At the same time, this is a very serious charge, involuntary manslaughter. It's not the same as voluntary manslaughter. It's not the same as murder. But talk about those differences and what kind of trouble this very famous actor could be facing if he's convicted of this.
Sure. Should this proceed and should this result in a conviction for Mr. Baldwin? I mean, this is a very, very serious charge. So unlike an intentional killing, involuntary manslaughter is going to be an unintentional killing. And for the New Mexico statute, it's one that could occur in the commission of a lawful act, which might produce death, but was done in an unlawful manner or without due caution. So when we talk about something being done without due caution, what we're really talking about is a recklessness standard. What they're saying is that Mr. Baldwin acted recklessly in the death of this woman. And let's just be clear, I mean, her death certainly is a terrible tragedy. So when we talk about something being reckless, we're talking about when a person consciously disregards a substantial and unjustifiable risk of causing death. For him, then, it's going to boil down to what was the standard by which he should have acted and behaved. You know, that's really what's going to happen. And I think there are many, many questions surrounding that, which is why this is such a surprising charge. Because the question becomes, who should have done what on that set such that this woman, this horrible death did not occur?
And if he is convicted of this, what kind of jail sentence do you face for this kind of charge?
Yeah, so there are two separate counts. One has a weapons enhancement, which would be a mandatory minimum of 5 years in prison, but both carry at least up to 18 months in prison. So, you know, prison, I don't know, Mr. Henderson, how much, you know, you've thought about prison conditions. I don't care if it's one day in prison, if it's a week, if it's 18 months, if it's 5 years. Prison conditions in our country are quite awful and inhumane. So no matter how long it is, it's a serious crime that would have a major effect on a person's life, on a person's psyche, on a person's career, on a person's reputation.
I'm talking with Jaleela Jefferson Bullock. She's an associate professor of law at Wayne State University's law school. We're talking specifically about the fact that actor Alec Baldwin has been charged with involuntary manslaughter in New Mexico as the result of an incident on a movie set in October of 2021 that ended the life of someone else on that set. We're also talking about the broader context here, this idea of accountability and liability, how we hold people responsible for the things that they do. Would love to hear from you while we have this conversation as well. What do you think is a reasonable response to this kind of tragedy? How do we hold people accountable for the things that they do, intentional or unintentional? There are lots of cases here recently in Michigan where I think we find ourselves really thinking about how we do that. How far do we extend the reach of liability, particularly in the criminal context? Does it make sense, for instance, to charge the parents of the Oxford High School shooter as they have done in Oakland County? When somebody has committed a crime and served their time in prison and comes out, how long should they continue to have to suffer some sort of repercussions because of what they did? We recently saw a somewhat controversial incident unfold at the Michigan Supreme Court where a clerk who had committed a violent felony had to end up resigning that position because of the objections raised by another Supreme Court justice other than the one who had hired the clerk. Give us a call. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to the Twitter. Go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you into the conversation. Before we get to listeners, Jaleela, I want to talk a little more about this big question that we're asking here: how we hold people accountable. Talk about in our society this tension between the idea of crime and accountability and punishment and how we deal with all of those things.
Sure. You know, it's a lot to think about. So in our country, if you look at the various criminal statutes in our different states and even our federal statutes, we have, you know, what's called, they refer to things called theories of punishment, which is why the government says that it punishes, either because for retribution or either for deterrence reasons. Now, although I believe that in this specific case, this prosecutor is making a statement about deterrence, our country really is a retributive one. where we believe if you do something bad, you should be punished. We believe that that punishment should be prison every single time. That's how the majority of us think. Why? I'm not really sure exactly how we got there. But we're in a situation in our country where we just think if you do the crime, you do the time, an eye for an eye, all that type of thing. That plays into kind of a retribution model. The problem, though, with retribution as a theory is that it requires that punishment be fair. And it's very difficult to determine what is fair in every single situation. Retribution says you should be punished to the degree of your moral blameworthiness. How bad was your action? And you only should be punished that much, not less than that, not more than that. And it's very difficult to quantify what that actually means. So we find ourselves putting people in prison with, again, deplorable conditions where they're subject to all types of threats on their body, on their health, to their mental health, all of these things, and put them there in our country for long periods of time and expect people to come back and then kind of reintegrate themselves after they've been in a situation that did not even lend itself to possible rehabilitation or reintegration. And that's what we do in our country. I bet you, if you poll most Americans and really talk to them about what happens in prison, they might say, I'm not so sure if that should always then be the punishment. And that's the conversation we have in our country. What should punishment really look like in order that it is fair and helpful to society?
And that prison experience, which you, I think, quite accurately described as awful, no matter what the particular context of the particular prison, that is something that we don't get a real look at in our society in many ways. And so I think it becomes very easy for people to talk about, hey, that person should go to jail, that person should go to prison, that person deserves this punishment, without really understanding, the full context, not only of of the loss of freedom and the other things that always happen with a prison sentence, but the particular circumstances that person will experience while they're on the inside.
Yes, it used to be, if you look at kind of the history of the development of our prison system, it used to be that people were sent away to prisons to go and kind of reflect upon their misdeeds. As a place you could go reflect, think about what you had done, perhaps participate in programs that might rehabilitate you, and then after a period of time, you come back into society. But all we have to do is look at the news and look at certain data to see that that is not the case anymore. Many, many different budgets have slashed programs, have slashed educational programs, other rehabilitative programs that might help a person better themselves while they're away. Why would we want a system where people go away and come back worse? That seems to make no sense, especially since the majority of crimes are not those that carry a punishment of a life sentence. You're going to come back out at some point. Don't we want folks to come back out? Of course, we want them to be better, right? We want them to be punished. We want them to be better, right? Mm-hmm. So that they can come back and reintegrate into our society.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Jalila Jefferson Bullock, associate professor at Wayne State University's Law School. And we will begin to hear from you, our listeners, both on the phones and on social. 313-577-1019 is the number. We'll start with Gordon in Flat Rock and Pat in Detroit. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number if you want to join them. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today. We will try to work you into the conversation that way. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
Bringing you news that matters.
Stories that impact your life.
Music from the Motor City and around the world.
This is 101.9 WDET.
Detroit's NPR station.
You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've decided to join us. We're talking about liability and accountability, especially in the criminal justice context, not just here in the state of Michigan, but all over the country. Last week, we learned that actor Alec Baldwin will face criminal charges, very serious criminal charges, for an incident on a movie set in which a gun that he was using as part of his role was discharged and wound up killing someone else on the set. Is that the kind of justice that we think makes sense here in America? Does that idea that everything should be pursued to the fullest extent make sense when we live in a world where there are lots of things that happen that are unintentional or accidental? Also think of other instances like this, local instances like the mass shooting at Oxford High School and the decision by prosecutors to go after the parents of the shooter in addition to the shooter. Does that make sense in our culture and in our society? As always, we want to hear from you on the phones and on social. 313-577-1019 is the number here. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. Let's start today with Gordon in Flat Rock. Gordon, welcome to the show.
Thank you. When this first occurred, I was watching MSNBC, and there was a gentleman on there who seemed like he was very knowledgeable about the protocols involved on movie sets. And what he said was that there are three people who handle the weapon. First, the armorer is supposed to inspect it. Then a director or assistant director is supposed to inspect it. And then the actor themselves are supposed to inspect it. And it seems like that didn't occur in this instance. So I'm actually surprised he wasn't charged sooner.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of who's responsible among the many people who work on a movie set is one of the dimensions of this, Gordon. And that detail is really important. Jaleela Jefferson Bullock, talk about how we suss out individual responsibility when there's clearly collective responsibility for something. And that gets also to this question of how to resolve the case of this Oxford High School shooter as well. The idea of charging parents for their negligence in allowing their child to have a gun that's used in a crime. This is something that prosecutors have to figure out all the time. Give us a window into how they make those kinds of determinations.
Sure. Well, in this specific instance with the Baldwin case, you know, there are, as Gordon pointed out, several people who are responsible for making sure that guns are used safely on the set. And it's disputable. So while I've heard some people, some industry experts say that the actor is part of that chain of command, I've heard others say that the actor is not. That the actor is there just to act and follow directions, and that the armorer and the assistant director is supposed to be the ones who handle and make sure that weapons are handled appropriately. The thing about that, too, is that Baldwin is also being treated as a producer. And so that's another piece that the DA said, well, he's a producer and an actor, and so he had a certain responsibility to ensure that certain safety procedures and standards were followed on the set. And that also was a place that's a bit cloudy, because we're not 100% certain what role is he a producer. It's possible for an actor, especially one who has such a high profile as he does, to negotiate their contracts to always get a producer credit, where they really have no responsibility for what happens on the set. It's part of the cachet of having them be on the team. And so all of that kind of raises lots of questions about who was responsible for what, which gets back to the confusion as to how this man was charged and maybe even why it took so long to do so, because that extreme reckless standard goes to who was the person who was reckless. Was it him? We know he pulled the trigger. He says he didn't, but it's not possible. Any of us who grew up around guns in any way, shape, or form, we know that guns don't just go off, mm-hmm. right? That doesn't really happen. You pull a trigger, you do something like that, and the gun is going to go off. We know he did that. The question is, though, whose responsibility was it to figure out why were there live rounds, and whose responsibility was it to know what was in the gun and what the possible risks were to engaging in even using that gun? But as it relates to the Oxford shooter, mm-hmm. that's a whole different thing, where parents certainly do have certain legal duties that as it relates to their children.
And so talk about that. It is unusual to see parents charged when their children go off and commit crimes. What's different about this particular crime?
Yeah, well, you're talking about a high-profile, shooting. That's going to be treated a lot differently. And I'm not in any way, shape, or form trying to imply that Ms. Hutchins' death is not important. It most certainly is. Mm-hmm. And it's a terrible tragedy. But you're talking about a high-profile shooting of many people. That's a very different situation than what has happened on the set of Rust. Very different. And so a message certainly has to be sent that, number one, the shooter's going to be held responsible. But number two, parents, you have to know what's happening with your kids. So to me, those are two different things. In the law, there are different relationships that create kind of special responsibilities that we would call legal duties in the law. And parents certainly have a duty to ensure that their children are acting in a certain way. If your kid goes off and decides to shoot a bunch of people as a parent, you should be held responsible for that.
Yeah. Again, really appreciate the call and the questions. Let's go next to Pat in Detroit. Pat, welcome to the show.
Hi. There's a couple additional issues that this seems to be. One is, there are sentencing guidelines, and as you know, you've spoken about in other shows, in some respects where judges don't have any discretion, they are required to give out maybe sentences that are larger than would be appropriate, and what was said earlier is that the sentencing guidelines was, 18 months to 5 years. And I mean, at 18 months might, it might be that in order to send a message, as was mentioned earlier, you might want to have somebody do a little bit of time, even 30 days for a rich celebrity, which go along with a felony conviction would send a really strong message without the necessity you say it was an accident, right? I mean, he was held responsible financially.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The other issue, and I don't know if this is actually at play or not, is that Alex Baldwin had to pay out a bunch of money, but Alex Baldwin probably has a lot of money, and it didn't cause him probably much financial hardship. And people want to see, hey, this rich guy, he didn't pay anything for this, really. Mm. Not like if you or me got it.
Sure.
This is not a hard, this guy ought to hurt in some other way.
Yeah,
just a little bit of money.
Yeah, Pat, I think that's a really important dynamic at work here, is the sense of making sure that he's punished, in an appropriate and in a way that he feels. Jalila, talk about, again, this discretion that they have in terms of how to sentence someone like Alec Baldwin, and whether, 18 months or whatever would send a message. I mean, you made the point earlier that, a day or an hour in prison is too much for most people, and that's something we should keep in mind as well. But this swing between 18 months and 5 years, that's a lot. It's a big difference between those two sentences.
Right. Well, I think the first question, because I think part of what we're doing right now, we know he pulled the trigger, but the question is, did he do so in a manner that is reckless, such that it fits the actual statute? So the first question is the man criminally responsible? Right. And I think that's one that's not 100% answer, because we have lots of disputing ideas about who's responsible for what on the set of a movie. Again, we know he pulled the trigger, but we don't know if he did so recklessly. If he thought that everything was fine, that this perhaps they had not real ammo in the gun, someone had checked it, then perhaps he doesn't meet that standard. That's the first question. Is he actually criminally responsible? If he is, then he should definitely be treated like anybody else in the system, regardless of his celebrity, regardless of his wealth, regardless of the amount of money he has. And I mean, I just said that regardless of his race, all of those things, mm-hmm. all of those things, right? It doesn't matter. He should be treated the same way. But the question first is he responsible? Another piece of this, so we're dealing with the law as it is. Another piece for perhaps, you know, reform efforts would be, should this be what the law, how the law works, too? It's another piece of it.
Yeah, yeah. Again, Pat, really appreciate the call and the comments. Let's go to Nick in Detroit. Nick, welcome to the show.
Hi, Stephen. Can you hear me?
Hey, how are you? Go ahead.
All right, so the issue I want to bring up is one of the cardinal rules of handling firearms is to treat all weapons as if they are loaded. That's an onus put on the individual that handles any weapon. I understand that maybe the law doesn't, might not require that, and maybe there's some limiting factor in the movie set that's different, but every law enforcement officer in this country is going to tell you that is one of the cardinal rules of safety. You absolutely must handle all weapons, treat them as if they are loaded, and you have to take that responsibility.
Yeah, yeah. That is obviously the way that we, you know, that we think of guns and gun safety in this country. I think it's a little different, because it's on a movie set. And you know, the confusion that some people have, including me, about how guns work on movie sets. You know, I don't think I believed that the guns they use to film movies are deadly. I mean, I didn't think they were real guns, and this was an incident that I guess tuned me into that. But this broader context of how we manage that is really important. And Jalila, obviously something went wrong with those kind of protocols on this movie set.
Sure. You know, again, the question is still out there. Why were there live rounds in that gun? And no one can yet answer that question with any real precision. So that's one piece that's still being explored. I think your caller is right that a person, any time I was taught that I am not necessarily an avid gun owner now, but I grew up in South Louisiana with parents from North Louisiana who hunted regularly. And so I was taught all about gun safety and how to go out and hunt deer and duck and all of those things and how to shoot skeet and all of that. We were always taught all about gun safety, and the responsibility was certainly on us who had the guns to make sure that we use them safely. But I do think the standard is different on a movie set. Actors are people who read scripts and follow the directions and do what the director says, and that's really all that they do. And I don't understand a situation where an actor is supposed to be the one responsible if they have that gun for knowing what's in the gun. There's a whole chain of command where once an actor receives the gun, they believe that this gun is safe to use on set, and then they use it. So I think that's very different than what happens in everyday life.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Jalila Jefferson Bullock, it was really great to have you here. To help our listeners sort through these questions about liability and accountability. Thanks so much for joining us on Detroit Today.
Well, thank you for having me. Have a wonderful rest of your day, everyone.
You too.
Bye-bye.
We're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we are going to switch subjects just a little bit. We're going to continue to look at gun violence in America, but this time in the wake of the latest mass shooting in California with Wayne State University's Stephanie Hartwell. Stay with us for more Detroit Today.